In today's podcast, we listen to a panel discussion on the investor's perspective. The panelists are Maven 11 Head of Investments and Trading, Balder Bowmans, Fright CEO, Mark Mewison, and Team Blockchain CEO, Johnny Fry. Resilience Partners Director Jeremy Barnett moderates the discussion. The podcast is recorded during the Tokenized Assets Conference in Amsterdam. Please visit our podcast channel for other podcasts in this series. Enjoy the podcast.
Next, we will very an interesting perspective. I'd like to ask forward Jeremy again to moderate this panel.
Right. We'll follow the same format as we did before. I think I'll let the chaps introduce themselves.
My name is Robert Nuss. I'm 25 years old.
Thanks, Robert.
And in 2013, I had a small portfolio of normal assets and Forex. But then I thought that especially this area was going to collapse with the coming of the quantitative easing. And I started to buy my first Bitcoins. And since then, I became down the rabbit hole. And now we had this mess of income of value. And last year, I took a sabbatical. And now I'm restructuring my portfolio again and looking very much into SEO and what they can deliver.
So Robert's going to give us the perspective as a private investor. Now, Balder, yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Mark. Yes, Balder Bowmans, 36 years old, one of the partners at Maven 11 Capital. We as a firm recognized, I think, late in 2018 after the summer that STOs are going to be a thing of the future and a lot more sustainable than the funding we've seen so far. Hence, we have decided to deploy a lot more capital. We've invested in an issuance protocol based here in the Netherlands called Dusk. Great guys sitting right over there. And also into a decentralized exchange, which actually issued itself as the first digital security in Europe, based in Liechtenstein. And that's us.
Yeah, brilliant. Johnny's here.
Hi, I introduced myself earlier on, Johnny Fry from a company called Team Blockchain. And really our focus is looking at how the technology blockchain and how digital assets are being used in the commercial environment. So there's been arguably, I would say, a myopic focus on using these things to raise money, but we believe that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's many, many ways you can use the assets for rewarding attention, for increasing awareness and building communities, which we think is going to be a big move. And Facebook will be kicking that off later this year or early next year. So we'll perhaps talk about that in a moment.
And then finally, Mark Mewison.
Hi, my name is Mark Mewison. My background is in trading on stock exchange and option trading. I started an investment fund in cryptocurrencies about 2 years ago. And we are basically invested in main cryptos like Bitcoin, but we're also looking at, used to look at ICOs, but you don't hear that word anymore, so now we're looking at STOs. And that's why we're here.
Okay, I'm going to, we did this a couple of days ago in London, so I'm going to kick this off with a nice gentle one just to warm things up. And my first question is, what asset classes are best suited to tokenization? I'm going to ask Johnny to start because we've done this before and I think he's got a few ideas. Some of them crazy, but you know, can't help it.
Well, at least I support a decent football team, but we'll move on from that.
Is that Leeds?
Certainly not Leeds, no. Yeah, unfortunately, Arsenal. But good to see four English teams in the finals, but we'll move on. Case.
And how did that go for you?
Yeah, not so well. Liverpool.
And how many English players?
Okay, so I think the a very obvious asset class are commodities. And the reason for that is that commodities are clearly a staple part of any economic growth. You may not be aware, but you can only trade copper, which there's hundreds of miles, 100 kilometres in this very building, 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. So is it any surprise that the other 19 hours, when actually people do or don't want to go long or short of copper, they're frustrated and can't do it, and they pop into something called the OTC, i.e. the over-the-counter market. And hence, when they can trade copper, it's only going to lead to excessive volatility, which is what we've seen. So I think actually having a digital asset linked to something physical, tangible and real, no, it's not going to go up a thousandfold, but many, many investors are looking for diversification. And I doubt in this room whether any of you have any direct exposure, apart from gold and maybe silver because you're wearing some, to various different commodities. And if you look at investing, I think one of the very interesting areas is going to be exposure to the electric car market. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to go and buy a car company who are currently in the process of reinventing themselves, or would you be interested in investing into a basket of commodities linked to the manufacturing of electric cars? Because those sorts of investments are coming out. And I'd argue, having been managing and advising clients for over 30 years, that actually having something tangible and real that you can understand, as opposed to a international growth fund, a Dutch smaller companies fund, those types of investments people are disengaging and they're not involved with, whereas something you can understand, and that's why I think that digitalization is ideal for the commodity market. Very, very liquid, very, very real, very, very tangible, and you can trade 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which I think will help many of the current institutional players in the market.
So, do you see that the trading is going to move on to mobile phones?
Yeah, we're working with two very big US investment banks and one European mutual fund company. The European one is particularly interesting because they have a billion euro UK growth fund. And what they want to do is digitize the fund. They don't want to raise money. They just simply want to offer investors a different way of holding. So instead of a share, instead of a unit, they actually want to offer a token. Because what they're finding is for these young guys, not us old farts, as we're called. You live your lives on these bloody mobile phones. I bet you'll be taking pictures of your lunch later on. God, you'll be taking, why do we care what your sandwich looks like? But you'll do it, that's okay. But you don't have brokers, you don't have financial advisors, you don't have broker dealers. You actually want to execute when and how and wherever you are. And I think a really good example of that is for our man from LA, is that in America, the rights to the NFL football were not sold last year to a TV station. They were actually sold to Facebook, because you no longer sit down watching TV in the UK. I have two children in their mid-20s. They live in London. They do not own a TV license. I said, Dad, we don't watch TV. We watch a bit of catch-up, but we want to watch it real-time, when we want to watch it, how we want to watch it. 9 times out of 10, they're watching it when they're talking to me, which is incredibly irritating, but that's a different story. So my real point is that if you've got an asset class that you cannot engage with your future customers, I believe it will become redundant. So that's where I see huge opportunities in terms of taking existing assets like a mutual fund, like a commodity, and effectively digitizing it.
If I can just drill down and I'll...
We still have time left?
Just 1 second. My sons don't own cars anymore, so the way in which they see assets is changing. Now, is that going to assist the tokenization process, the fact that the lads aren't bothered about buying a Porsche or a Ferrari or a BMW. That's all we were interested in when we were kids. So is that really what Johnny's been talking about?
Yeah, but he's boiling down to, I think, liquidity in trading at one point, right? So commodities, so if we solve the 24-hour trading on commodity side, then part of his problem is already solved. We don't need tokenization, I think, for this liquidity aspect.
Right, so it's not about the way in which people are looking at assets, it's the way in which people can invest in assets.
And make them transferable between parties. So I think that's the biggest use case here, right? The transfer of the value.
Yeah, okay. Right. Now, the original question was, what asset classes do you think are best suited to tokenization? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think obviously real estate is a huge market from a market cap perspective, but also one that you don't transfer a lot. So making that one tokenized and transferable is gonna add liquidity and probably also add pricing, and makes a lot of sense from an investment perspective.
Is that because it's quicker to sell a tokenized house, or is it because you could sell a floor in a block of apartments is it
I think that's it. Yeah, make it transferable between parties.
Okay, so we've got if you're writing this down, we've got housing. That's where we're going down the line. Anybody else? What should people be looking at?
Well,
for
I
digital
can think
assets.
I can think of two things I would like to see tokenized. One is a great idea. I liked an ICO. It was called Momentum, I think, and it was about loyalty points. So you could swap your air miles for your hotel points. It never got off the ground, but I really like the idea. I still do. And the other thing I can think of is my own fund. I mean, for Dutch regulation, it's my investors have to be Dutch. They have to spend at least 100k. And if I could have a token for my own fund, then anyone could buy it, even for 10 euros. So that would be great. I don't think it's possible yet, but I would be interested in that.
So at the moment, I bought into a small crypto fund who are investing, like you guys are doing, into coins, and they managed to get regulated by the Isle of Man. So it's the first UK crypto fund, I think, that sneaked in under the radar. But really, what you're saying is there's a big market for that type of investment.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, and finally, down the end.
Yeah, and if I would think about the big market, I mean, only this year there became an inflow of 7 billion euros in the Dutch market by institutional investors in the housing market. So real estate tokenization would be definitely one of my preference.
Okay, so real estate's where it is. Lucky that, because I'm going to come and talk later on about tokenization of real estate. So I got that right. Okay, now the next question is this. What do we have to do, do you think, guys, we start at the far end, to persuade the CEOs of what I'm calling bricks and mortar businesses, in other words, traditional old-fashioned bricks and mortar businesses, that this world we're talking about is the future, and that we don't need to be mentioning Mount Gox, Silk Road, where my kids told me they always used to buy their drugs, and Dad, you shouldn't be getting involved in this shit, and the DAO. Has the time arrived when the institutional money is going to come washing in? I think that's really what people want to know.
And it's a very interesting topic, and that's exactly the reason why I took last year in 2018 the sabbatical. Because of this massive income of value, there became also a new type of speculator on the market, and that is called the scam people, the so-called BitConnex, and the people who raise too much money. And you already talked about it today, I read that was talking about Kik, for example. These are the kind of parties that burn their asses right now and are going out of the market. And now in 2019, I think most of the people are already gone, and we're starting to build a new foundation, a new structure for the new flow. Yeah.
So really the concerns that people, the grown-ups, if I can call them that, have been expressing, they're no longer really genuine, so, from your perspective. Is that the consensus of the panel, do you think?
I agree with Robert, yeah.
Good.
I think it's very, very early stages for, and I wouldn't worry too much about the CEOs, because they are also just listening to their clients. But I think both technologically and also regulatory, there's no adoption yet. And it's just not ready yet, I think. That's my view.
I mean, I heard that the CEO, I think it was of JP Morgan, came out and said that blockchain's nonsense, this is all a scam. And at the same time, the same day he made that announcement, JP Morgan were funding one of these events.
And his trading desk was buying Bitcoin.
Yeah.
They are an open market, 24/7. They have the biggest trading desk. They're doing the biggest OTC deals currently. So,
So it's coming and it's here to stay.
Yeah, look at the trends, right? I think ICOs raised 2 billion at the end of 2017. Start of 2019, they're only raising 50 million on a monthly basis. So that's ICOs definitely not a good funding method. Now we're getting into STOs. But obviously it's ground which still has to be covered on the regulatory front. And it's also more costly. So I think the market's a little bit slower, but it's a lot more sustainable going forward for institutional investors to be coming into the market.
Good news. Johnny, you got your ear to the ground.
Okay, so again, we're focused on bottom-up. We're focused on startups. We're focusing on companies raising money, which the regulators are struggling with, and the lawyers are licking their lips because Bitcoin's gone up And now some of these companies have got some cash, which means that some of the investors which bought in have seen the token price fall, and we've seen a number of litigation cases coming. And I'm not saying that's why CMS is sponsoring today's event, but certainly in London, litigation is increasingly becoming important. But why do we believe that we're going to see more and more companies using these tokens and this technology? Well, it's very, very simple. The market is driven by institutional demand. With respect, the man in the street doesn't actually own very much of the shares directly. They've given their money, they've given the control, they've given the power to the pension funds. They've given it to the portfolio managers. And they will not touch this stuff until you actually see compliance being applied to a much greater extent. But the good news is, it's on its way. Because if you take just three asset classes, we've already talked about one, which is property, it pays you a rental income. You take equities, they pay you dividends. And if you take bonds, they pay you a coupon. Now, at the moment, those income payments are actually paying you on typically a quarterly or a six-monthly basis. Now, when I used to manage money for clients, I would buy ABN AMRO shares on a Monday. I would collect the quarterly or six-monthly dividend, and I'd sell it on a Tuesday. It was called dividend stripping, completely legal, and it was designed for those clients who needed extra income. But what happened, I would buy it at a euro, I'd get the 2% income, and then the price of the share, assuming everything else, was actually down to 0.98 cents the following day. So I'd lost capital but made income. But if you then look in the real world where you're finding companies like T. Rowe Price, a classic example, getting fined $130 million dollars because they don't know who owns the shares. So when they actually started voting, when Dell was through some sort of corporate action and they voted incorrectly, the registrar's records are incorrect all the time the stock markets are open. So we've got inaccurate information and we've got people who are getting income when they may have only held it for 1 or 2 days. If you then look at the situation in a digital environment, same assets, you can actually know in real time who owns those shares, and you can actually also be paid income based on the number of minutes that you've held those shares. So talking to the compliance departments, talking to the regulators, talking to the custodians, they're saying, look, this is what we want because it's doing something called treating your customers fairly. It's one of the tenets of financial regulation across Europe and America. Whereas this situation, it's paper, analog based, and they're getting it wrong. So I believe what you're going to see is this top down, driven by governments, driven by financial institutions, to be able to replicate what is now possible over here. And therefore, it'll be a matter of, look, I want to buy shares in Apple, but I don't want to buy it on a paper-based system. I actually want to be able to buy them on a real-time basis, and I want to be able to interact with my actual shareholders, not have the nominee structure that would currently happen. So, but this can take a while to come, but I think it'll be compliance-driven.
You're sure that the dividend stripping is legal? Do we have a lawyer on this, by the way?
Absolutely, totally legal.
Yeah, you sure?
Happens every day.
Enough lawyers here.
I think the first thing I learned, don't go on dividend stripping here in Amsterdam. But
yeah. No, it's there and happening.
It's different law between the UK and here.
I think it's the Dutch that taught us that one, actually.
Okay, well, let's get into this now. Prospectuses. I think the prospectus regulations have come out and are applicable to all of this stuff nowadays. Is that a good thing? As an investor...
So did you talk?
Yeah, anyone. Yeah.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
I'm not a lawyer, but I think it's about European perspective.
Yeah, the European.
Right?
You
can raise up to, 5 to 8 million, depending on the country you're based in, and you don't have to write a prospectus.
Yeah, and as I understand it, you can passport. So once you can get your fund approved in Liechtenstein or wherever it is, it's then... until Brexit anyway, and I presume the passporting regulations will still apply afterwards, you're still then free to trade in the rest of Europe. So we all support prospectuses. Do we read the prospectuses when we're investing?
Depends on who you're offering to, right? I mean, if you're offering to more of a retail investor who is not busy full-time with investing, I think it would make sense to have a prospectus written and to be a little bit more compliant and give more information out. If you're talking to institutional investors, I think it's a different ballgame. So no, we don't always need a prospectus. Ah.
But maybe now 2019 people will start to read the prospectus of what happened before, because now they do want to know where they invest in.
So should the prospectus also include an accountant's audit, a sign off like you'd get if you invested on the AIM market or something like that, even a lightweight?
Jeremy, we're looking at the wrong thing. Two-thirds of fund managers underperform the index. The professionals don't beat a passive index fund. How many of you have made investment and not read the prospectus, not read the latest report and accounts? This isn't about regulation. It's not about prospective directives. It's not about Money Laundering 5, which is coming out. It's about who's going to buy these things. It's about liquidity. Now, Ryan made a brilliant point earlier on about BrewDog. There's a community, there's a group of people that are engaged in that product. It's a beer. And they want to see it happening. They want to be involved. And what we've done with securities is that because Wall Street couldn't cope in the 70s with bits of paper being shoveled around the system as people bought and sold shares, they used to shut the stock market on a Wednesday. Because Monday, Tuesday, trade, sort all the paperwork out, then trade again on Thursday and Friday. So then they bought in something called DTCC, which is effectively a nominee. But the trouble is with a nominee is the company now no longer is engaged with their shareholders because they don't know who they are. They're held in a nominee. So what digital assets offer the opportunity is to re-engage with the shareholders and the companies. I don't know the statistics here in Amsterdam, but in London we have 622 companies that are quoted on AIM or FTSE fledgling between 2 and 50 million in size. And I promise you, there's zip liquidity. These are regulated companies, these are established businesses, and you cannot buy them as I tried to when I was running money, and you cannot sell shares when I was actually helping companies to raise money. So what we need to address is actually the liquidity and make it relevant to the people that want to engage, because the compliance is actually relatively straightforward.
So it's about the money coming in.
I mean, the liquidity is a valid point, right? But I think there's two things. You're right, we don't need prospectus for all cases, but ICOs has learned one thing. Investing has become a global game, and everybody can participate. So we're going to do the same thing now, only within a more regulatory framework with STOs. So there are some laws and regulations we need to follow here. The second thing is obviously liquidity. The thing that something is transferable between parties doesn't also mean there's always a market to either sell or buy. I am of the opinion that this eventually will be solved as we get secondary markets online. There's not a lot of secondary markets yet when it comes to tokens. We're seeing a lot of parties going after MTF licensing here in Europe and broker-dealer licensing in the US. So I do expect secondary markets to be more online, let's say, in the first half of 2020. And then we're going to see the liquidity probably more coming in.
Yeah, just on that, I don't know about secondary markets. I keep hearing about secondary trading. And I'm worried about utility tokens being traded on secondary markets within minutes of them being released, which I think turns them into securities, because it's the tradability and the fact that people want to make a profit, I think, which determines whether something's a utility or whether something is an equity or a security. So how much secondary trading is going on at the moment? Where can I find it? How can I get involved in secondary trading? Anyone?
None. It's non-existent. I think you mentioned one, the LSE. There's one listing on the LSE, so it's non-existent. But you can trade a lot of utility tokens if you want to. They're 100% speculative, so I wouldn't advise. But I think eventually when there's more tokenization of real estate or any other assets we just discussed, that we're also probably going to unlock secondary markets for these somewhere.
Okay, and if I'm going to launch my own token, can I prevent secondary trading? Can I do that?
Right, well, I think this is one of the key advantages that digital assets give you. I'm sorry to keep going back to the institutional market, but they're the guys and girls that look after the money. If you're managing a, let's say, European fund and you say you cannot have more than 10% in German companies or 5% in Greek companies, what happens on a daily basis, practically, is the value of German companies, because for some reason Campbell Soup last night went up by 10%, huge big American company, and it suddenly popped up in value. If you're holding that, then suddenly you find that your value of a share has actually gone up in value. You've breached. You're now in breach of your trust documentation. You have to report that to the regulator, and you have to actually sell the shares. If it's a digital investment, you can overlay that with automatic execution, call it smart contracts, but I'm sure the lawyers in the room will argue they're not smart and they're not contracts. But they will give you the ability to keep you within line of your actual asset class. So that's where I think we're going to see the demand coming through. Because on your volume, the volumes in the utility market are substantial. They're even bigger in the OTC market.
They're all fake.
And that's the other interesting thing.
Substantial and fake.
But if you look at what the revenues are of the exchanges, they're not fake. They're making a lot of money.
Okay, can I just move the conversation towards policing? I think Robert's got views about this. The traceability of all the trading is what's interesting the SEC. I think it's interesting the FCA, because every trade is recorded. Now, is this a good thing? Who's going to be supervising this? Who's going to get access to the information? And are we into this business about security cameras and on every corner?
And there was a guy here in the room who already asked a question about this two times, and he's sitting there in the corner. And you were talking about the Financial Action Task Force, which is a combination of countries, which are US, China, Russia, India, EU, and they sign a mandate. And this is a mandate that says, we're gonna say that every virtual asset has to have some information in it from every transaction therefore has been. So yesterday I made a direct message to the Prime Minister of Finance, and today they're talking about it in the second chamber. I don't know if it said as well. Is it okay?
Yeah, it's
okay. Yeah. And I think this is Parliament, yeah. And I think this is a very, very, very important and urgent situation. And I think everyone has to look into this, because it's good for the SEO market. It's wonderful because you guys are already doing it. But like the people like me who are building on Bitcoin, creating open source protocols, have really a problem. So that's my opinion about it. Yeah.
I think it's probably one of the biggest challenges facing the market today. Because if the task force gets its way, you will only see regulated exchanges and platforms that are regulated and authorized by a limited number of people, and potentially puts the control back with the banks, which I think is would be a great shame. But having said that, we've already got regulated exchanges like the International Securities Exchange, like the London Stock Exchange, like the Boston Stock Exchange, the New York Stock Exchange, the Swiss Stock Exchange. They are all involved in different types of exchanges at the moment, trying to get their heads around the rules and regulations to be able to offer the ability to trade. So we actually have seen in London, there's a company called 2030. Jeremy knows the founder, as do I. And it is a, for all intents and purposes, it's a share, it's an equity, but it's in a digital format, and it's now trading on the London Stock Exchange. It raised $3 million. I doubt it's done no more than a handful of trades to date. Why? Because it's a smaller company, and it's difficult to trade smaller companies, whether you're real or whether you're digitized. And I know I keep coming back to it, but I think that's the key challenge that we've got. Build your market, get your distribution, because that's the thing which is really, really important.
Okay, I've been given the signal to wrap up, but before we do so, I think you've got a really great panel of people who are actually doing this at the Coalface Investing. So are there any questions or burning questions in the audience?
Are there any questions?
Is anyone familiar with atomic swaps here in the room? Atomic swaps, does anyone know what it is? Not so many people. Okay. Like atomic swaps will be the new exchanges, mainly run on a protocol. And I think also for regulators, it's something very interesting upcoming the next years. And also look into that. And I'm sorry, you wanted to ask a question. Is that correct?
So you're asking him a question now.
I have a question. So Idan Niago, Cement Dow. I look at things like CoinMarketCap every now and again, and it's extremely weird experience because you look at the different things and the valuations that are attached to them, and it seems to be completely random. There seems to be absolutely no, you know, you look at the top 10, top 20, doesn't matter how far down you go, some exceedingly good projects, for example, Grin, which is a very technically interesting project, is probably trading today at around $20 million. And then you have all kinds of other weird things that are traded at hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, part of it is the lack of liquidity issue. But from your perspective as investors, given how the benchmarks make almost no sense at all, and the fact that for most projects there's no sort of strong methodology like discounted cash flows, how on earth do you figure out what is a good deal and how to price a deal?
Very interesting. For example, I'm a multi-billionaire because I own some of these coins, which are not have any value. But the thing is that I have a certain amount of coins which are traded at a price. And the less price, that will be the market's value. So what I do is I compare it with other companies like real due diligence as you do on the normal stock market. But that is the most interesting thing, and that's why I say as an investor, you only get paid to be right first. And to be right first, there's no time to wait for consensus. If you want to make money in the crypto market, put your money in an asset, a security, or, for example, Grin. Grin, you can't value Grin at this moment because it is so inflationary. But if you believe in the protocol and the Mimblewimble protocol behind it, it's so cheap. And then if you compare it with, okay, the regulations are coming in and Grin is a security, is a privacy token, for me, 20 million market cap is way, way, way too low.
Okay, just before we wrap up.
Can I also answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
yeah,
what we do at our fund is we have a benchmark, which is the Bitwise 10 index. And we follow for 80% of the, 75-80% of the fund is just market cap wise. So we follow our benchmark. Because I agree with you, it's really hard to pick a coin, you know, something you like, something you don't. But it's really hard to explain why something went up or down. It's just... there's just really difficult. But with the discretionary part, which is 20-25% of the fund, we try to buy, we participate in an STO or in smaller coins, and then you do your research, and then you actually read the white papers, and you see, and then it's more like a long-term investment. But the difference between, what is it, Ripple, why is Ripple worth what it is? I mean, nobody knows. I mean, I don't know, and nobody ever told me.
And they're selling every day themselves. That's perfect. No, I think it's impossible to value what's out there. I think there's a lot of modeling being done over the past 4 years, which is very experimental, especially on the utility field. But we haven't seen any utility yet, so no one is going to know what's going to be happening down the line, let's say in 2 to 3 years, when we get really real utility on these networks and how pricing is going to evolve over that time. But yeah, for now, it seems handy to really downsize on your utility exposure. And so hence we invest into security token offerings, which allow us to get a revenue distribution from their platforms, which is a lot more.
Well, it's easily calculable. I'm based at UCL, and I know that in the economics department, we're now starting to look at tokenization as an academic subject. And under Professor Medda, advanced finance and innovative finance, we've got a PhD student who's actually trying to analyze and try and draw some themes from the successful coins and the ones that are failing, in order to try to be able to predict, you know, and assist in what's a crock of shit, as Al Pacino once said in Scent of a Woman, I think it was, and what's actually got some value.
And the issue is then we're using historical data mostly, but most of the historical data is flawed.
Yeah.
So that's what's going wrong. So making predictions about the future on the back of historical data of coins and tokens which have been manipulated on a wide scale doesn't make any sense.
And I think, John, just before we wrap up, Johnny's got a point that he wants to make, because I think his point is that it's not just about the money. I never thought I'd say that. My clerk, who's the person who puts me into how much is he going to charge? what's it worth? You know, I've actually said it in public. It's not just about the money. There is actually an environmental. There's other stuff around this, which can be encouraged, I think, Johnny, by the use of this technology.
Yeah, I'll come to that in a second, but I'd just like to answer your question.
Yeah.
And I'd put a severe health warning over 99% of all the current ICOs out in the market. And that is that they are suffering from potentially systemic risk. Now, what I mean by that is that the majority of them were funded by what? Help me out. No. Well, partly. But what? How did you get into an ICO? What did you need to have? And? Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Majority of ICOs are funded by Bitcoin and Ether. And the majority of the people that run the ICOs didn't sell Bitcoin and Ether, and that's why the price went up, and that's why the price went down. So if you think you're actually investing in a portfolio of non-correlated assets because they're doing different things in different sectors, different industries, make sure you know what you're investing in and actually find out how many Bitcoin and Ether have they currently got, because you might find that you think you're diversifying, but actually you've got systemic risk, and if Bitcoin goes back up, you're going to make a fortune. And if Bitcoin collapses, you're going to lose some money. But the thing I was talking to Jeremy earlier on is that, and this is the thing that I find really, really interesting. I think most of you will be familiar with the concept of air miles. And I think it's useful to think of air miles, i.e. you fly with a company and you get given something. They're air miles, they're tokens. And they have no correlation to the performance of the airline that you're actually using. And I think that's quite an interesting way to look at buying shares in KLM as opposed to getting part of their reward scheme. But where we're beginning to see more and more interest is in the area of social responsibility statements. And last Christmas, Shell directors were actually told you will not get your maximum bonus and remuneration unless you can prove you're doing something to save the planet. And they've looked at a company called SC Johnson, who have currently got 9 projects running in Indonesia, where they are actually giving typically ladies and children tokens on a mobile phone for recycling plastic. And in these 9 villages so far, they've managed to recycle 10,000 tons of plastic. So therefore, SC Johnson can say, tick, we've actually spent X $100,000 on helping to improve the planet. We're a good socially responsible company. And that's kind of how far it normally goes. But because the information about the tokens is held on the blockchain, they can then drill down and say, oh, well, Freddie, he actually used his tokens to buy some clothes. Sally, she did it for medicine or food or whatever it is. So you can have transparency right the way through the system so that not only are you sort of encouraging people to behave a little bit more responsibly, but you're able to actually have the money flow down to, hopefully, to make a real difference. Now, there's no reason why those tokens can't be traded and for the more environmentally conscious funds, of which it's becoming an increasing big market, people invest money to that as opposed to just making money. Those sorts of tokens, I believe, will become quite interesting and attractive, and it's a very different investment approach than we're currently seeing. And a good example of how digital assets can actually tokenize and give you diversification in a way currently the current traditional systems just can't offer you that.
Okay, I think we're done. That was really interesting, and again, it's one of these conversations that I think if we had another half hour, we could keep going. But thank you very much, chaps. Really interesting.
Thank
Cheers.
Thank you all. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to the CMS podcast. Did you enjoy this podcast? Please visit our podcast channel and use the subscribe button to stay up to date on legal content. Until next time.